It is an honor for me to be here with you all this morning and to share with you a little bit of the work that I do. I drove in from College Station. I still live in College Station, although now I teach at Baylor. And getting to know the Baylor community and the Waco community has just been an honor for me, a real privilege. And so I'm happy, I'm honored to be here with you all this morning to share a little bit of the gospel message from the streets of New York City. So there I was at the restaurant La Fonda Boricua in East Harlem. So if you're ever in New York City, La Fonda. Some people call it Spanish Harlem in New York City. It's the historic neighborhood where Puerto Ricans settled in large numbers in the years after World War II. So I was there to meet my tocayo, Felipe Luciano, the former national chairman for the Young Lords. Now, the Young Lords were a radical organization in the late 1960s and early 1970s, originally started in Chicago, but they had a chapter develop and open up in New York City. And they were really the Puerto Rican or the Latino version of the Black Panther Party. So let me see if this is... We're good? All right. So there, so this is a quick photo of one of the churches that the Young Lords had worked in and had actually transformed into what they started to call the People's Church, La Iglesia de la Gente. And I'll say more about this as we go. There we go. But I was there to talk to Felipe. That's Felipe. That's my tocayo right there. That's Felipe Luciano. I was there to talk to him. This is a photo of him back in those days. That's a photo of his most recent photo of him in his brand new book, Flesh and Spirit, Confessions of a Young Lord. So I was there to talk to Luciano about the time in 1969 when the Young Lords occupied the first Spanish United Methodist Church, located on the corner of 111th and Lexington Avenue. Luciano was one of many former Young Lords that I interviewed during my visit to New York City, including other Young Lords, including Juan Gonzalez. Some of you might recognize the name Juan Gonzalez. He is currently the co-anchor of Democracy Now! If you listen to Democracy Now!, wrote a great book called Harvest of Empire, A History of Latinos in the United States, continues to be very, very active. But it was Luciano that I was most interested in talking with because he had grown up Pentecostal and grew up in a church similar to the one that I grew up in South Texas. When Luciano arrived at the restaurant, he was a little late, but I called him, he made it. We immediately started talking. Strange, because when we started talking, it's like we had already known each other. We hit it off immediately. So the Young Lords emerged as part of a generation of activists that were searching for a usable path, a way forward by drawing inspiration from a radical past, learning from the Mexican-American and Puerto Rican radical traditions dating back to the late 19th century, a past that recognized the revolutionary potential of the people. The young women and men that made up the Young Lords, and here's a photo of them if you notice, you'll recognize Luciano right at the middle. Young women and men that made up the Young Lords came from El Barrio, or East Harlem, and from surrounding boroughs. They were former gang members. Some were college students. They were all brilliant. They were predominantly Puerto Rican, but members of the group were also African American. They were Mexican, Dominican, Cuban, and so forth. They were idealists, but also pragmatic in their approach to solving problems and serving their community. They organized as a group, as the Young Lords, in the summer of 1969 in New York City, and immediately started walking the streets of East Harlem, talking to their neighbors and asking people to clarify the most important issues. What problems would they like to see these young people take on? What problems would they like to see these young people help solve in the community? Everyone kept telling us that it was garbage in the streets, Luciano told me that afternoon. That it was too much. And that the sanitation department was not picking up the garbage. So they got to work. Literally, as you see Luciano doing there, sweeping the streets. They started sweeping the streets every Sunday. Each member of the Young Lords would pick a block, clean up the trash, and bag it. From there, they tried to get the attention of the sanitation department. And when that didn't work, they started blocking main avenues with the trash to block commuters from getting to work, from getting to downtown Manhattan. There you go. You see some of that. That still didn't work. You would think that blocking commuters in New York City would do it. That didn't do it. Then they started burning the trash in the streets, and that got the attention of the city sanitation department. By October, this was summer of 69, by October of 1969, the Young Lords had established a breakfast program for young children together with members of the Black Panther Party, but they needed more space. So when they started visiting other houses of worship, most could not offer help because they also lacked sufficient space, or they were simply too far out of the way to be of any real service to the residents of East Harlem. Not only was the First Spanish United Methodist Church, and that's a contemporary image, that's an up-to-date image of the church and where it stands. You can still join them for church on Sunday mornings there. It's known more famously today as the People's Church. Not only was the First Spanish United Methodist Church large and mostly empty Monday to Saturday, it also happened to be located only two blocks away from the central office of the Young Lords. The First Spanish United Methodist Church was right in the heart of El Barrio. Its location and space made it the perfect spot. Staying in the neighborhood was critical. East Harlem was in the midst of an urban crisis, as was the rest of the United States, that was pushing poor people out. It was part of the deterritorialization of an entire community, what politicians and city planners and others simply called urban renewal in the 1960s. They wanted to use this building, but they, of course, needed permission from clergy, from the religious leadership, and that proved to be difficult. The pastor of the church of the First Spanish United Methodist Church, Humberto Carranza, was a Cuban exile who had left Cuba after Castro's revolution in 1959. In fact, the first meeting the pastor had with the Young Lords was in October of 1969, and it did not go well. It's one of my favorite photos, by the way. The minister flipped out, Juan Gonzalez told me. Here he was, seeing five Che Guevara lookalikes, and so he denied us use of the church immediately. There were several more meetings, October and November, and it produced no results. Pastor Carranza rejected the offer from the Young Lords to use their church as a space to offer community services like a breakfast program, a medical clinic, and a clothing distribution center. The Young Lords never wanted to interrupt Sunday services. They simply wanted to use the church building during the days when it was not in use. They were not ones to give up. The Young Lords started attending Sunday service. Imagine Young Lords sitting amongst you all on Sunday morning. They said, let's just go to church, man. We all go to church. They started attending churches at Sunday morning services at the church. And in December of 1969, already in conversations since October, they stood outside of the church passing out leaflets, trying to make their case to church leaders that their intentions were good. They still didn't listen. So, on Sunday morning of December 28, 1969, after conversations with the church went nowhere, the Young Lords simply took over the building. That's them right outside the church doors. They sat patiently. They waited for the pastor to finish preaching. These were kids. Some of them had grown up Puerto Ricans. Some of them had grown up in Pentecostal churches. Some of them in Catholic churches, but they knew to respect the clergy. So they waited till the pastor finished preaching. And they waited for the 80 or so parishioners to exit the church before they shut the doors with 6-inch railroad spikes, apparently brought in using a violin case, and then they just occupied the building. It was as peaceful as it was dramatic. Not long after, a wooden sign with red lettering dangled from a window, La Iglesia de la Gente, the people's church. And inside the church on the wall, behind the altar of the church, a white sheet hung high with a painted inscription, Bienvenidos a la Iglesia del Pueblo. First Spanish United Methodist Church on December 28, 1969 was now the People's Church. In only a matter of days, the Young Lords transformed the inside of the church into an art space, a medical treatment area. They got volunteers from Columbia University, other medical students from across the city to come in and volunteer. When they didn't have the resources, they simply took them from other places, pushed chest x-ray unit trucks into East Harlem, established them there so they could do tuberculosis testing and other sorts of things that the residents of East Harlem did not have access to. That's also one of my favorite photos. There was an area for a clothing drive. They were giving away coats, shoes, pants, shirts, things that the residents needed. They were getting donations from across the city of New York. And they established an area for a breakfast program and a gathering space and community space where they would read poetry. If you've ever been to New York City, to the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, in the Lower East Side, the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, where you can go today and hear beautiful poetry, spoken word, all of that, music, live music, and so forth. All of that begins within the walls of the First Spanish United Methodist Church. They read poetry. They set up these institutions within the church. This was a community effort where everyone had a job and everyone contributed. When a young mother from the Bronx named Connie Morales first entered the church, she recalled it feeling like home. By the third day of the occupation, it was clear that something special was taking place. Not only was public sentiment shifting in the Lord's favor, that sounds pretty good, right? Shifting in the Lord's favor. The occupation had turned into its own gospel parable, with its own miracles. Jonathan Black wrote it this way for Village Voice magazine. He wrote, quote, one bathroom for 500 people, one kitchen serving four hot meals a day to over 200 people, with no shortage of food or supplies or spirit. What once was a bland and mostly empty church building had turned into a clinic, into a community gathering space. And for 11 days, the church became the artistic center for the Puerto Rican arts and culture. That's Jonathan Black in Village Voice. People that had never before entered the doors of the church or any church were now front and center. The New York Times journalist Michael Kaufman described the inside of the church like this. And this was helpful for me because when I first started to learn of these stories, and it didn't just happen in New York, it happened across the country. I didn't even know what it would look like to occupy a church and to take it over. And then in a city like New York, saturated with news as it was, the Young Lords become front page news in the New York Times. They capture the attention of an entire city already saturated with news. Michael Kaufman of the New York Times wrote it like this. He said, there's a loudspeaker system playing songs like Mighty Mighty Spade and Whitey by the Impressions, interspersed with speeches from Malcolm X. In the basement, there were piles of clothing being organized to give away. Yoruba Guzman, the Young Lord's Minister of Information, said that if the police come, we'll just continue partying. We're going to have folk dances and songs and experience our culture, because that's what the Lords are all about. Throughout the entire 11-day occupation, television cameras, documentarians, news reporters, captured the theatrics in a city already saturated with drama. The entire city was fixated. Celebrities, Jane Fonda, Donald Sutherland, showed up to lend their support. Some boldly proclaimed that if Christ had been alive in 1969, he would have been a young lord, and I believe him. Whatever preconceived notions people had about the supposed violent, dangerous, or radical views of the young lords were quickly dashed by the fact that the television cameras showed them wearing dark shades and berets, serving breakfast, offering free medical care, folding clothes, and quoting scripture. The occupation ended on January 7th of 1970, 11 days after they had first occupied the building. As a light snow fell on that early Wednesday morning, hundreds of police officers took positions around the Peak Roof Church building and sealed off traffic. Police unhinged the front doors, and as they had been instructed, the occupiers exited the building in groups of 20 into these police vans. As they walked out of the church, all 105 of them, they shouted, "Power to the people," and sang, "Qué bonita bandera," what a beautiful flag. Before being arrested, they cooked the last of the eggs and the oatmeal and ate breakfast together, a last breakfast, at the pre-dawn hour. Eight young lords did end up appearing before a judge, but charges were eventually dropped as, would you believe it or not, Methodist ministers from across the country stepped up to defend what the young lords had done, calling them apostles of change. That's me and Felipe that morning, that day, that afternoon at La Fonda Boricua. I sat and I listened to Felipe Luciano tell me this story during the interview with all the flair of a Pentecostal preacher, something he never, never lost. We ate together. We talked. He had lots of questions about Texas. What's it like over there, man? Are you all okay? And I listened. And toward the end of the interview, with tears in his eyes, he leaned in close to me. And he said, "This was a beautiful moment inside that church. We owned it. We supported it. We nurtured it. We took care of our kids, and we were free." He continued, he said, "We had rallies, Felipe. We read poetry. Mijo, we read poetry. We watched movies. We felt free inside of that church." I can only picture what that must have been like. But I came away from that interview inspired. And it reminded me in that moment, and this was probably a 3-hour long conversation. I didn't think it was going to go that long, but it did. And in that moment of sharing with one another and of taking care of one another as they were doing in that church, that afternoon, the young lords reminded me. And this morning, I hope that they remind all of us that when we organize, when we collectively move together on behalf of our communities, and I think we all collectively understand it in here that it's probably never been as important as it is now, that when we share meals and when we share our possessions and when we are in communion with one another, we can find freedom.